Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. If being pregnant weren't enough in itself to make you nervous and anxious, this COVID-19 outbreak is raising a set of new scary questions for women who are expecting. Major health organizations advise pregnant women to take the same precautions that everyone else, but still, there's a lot of unknowns about what is happening with this virus and how it's going to impact women who are pregnant and their pregnancy, their unborn child, and then the newborn child, how that is going to happen moving forward. So what should expectant mothers and their families know about giving birth in the time of coronavirus? We will take your calls. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to talk about your experience, your concerns, whatever is happening in your family. Are you thinking about getting pregnant? Are you maybe thinking about, well, maybe now is not the best time? Well, we have some experts who can answer your questions for you. We're joined for the remainder of the hour by Dr. Patrick Ramsey. He is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and maternal fetal specialist at UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Ramsey, thanks for being here on The Source.
No, thank you, David.
Also with us is Marina Starleaf Riker. She's a reporter for the San Antonio Express News and wrote an in-depth piece about how this is impacting one couple here in San Antonio. Marina, good to have you.
Hi, thanks so much.
And also with us is Elisa Godfrey, a clinical director at the San Antonio Birth Center and a certified professional midwife. Elisa Godfrey, good to have you on The Source. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Dave.
So thank you, all of you. First off, Dr. Ramsey, what is the basic, most fundamental 411 that you want people to know about this situation?
Well, I think it's an evolving situation that we're learning about more every day. Now we're about 2.5 months into this virus, and we've learned quite a bit about the risks and the lack of risk. So at this point, at least, it seems like pregnant women are not affected as significantly by this virus as the general population, or at least not as worse than the general population. That's great news. The other good news we have so far is that it does not appear to be that the virus can cross readily into the baby from a pregnant woman if she gets COVID-19. So that's another good piece of information for pregnant women. And if we look at other coronaviruses that are cousins to SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus which causes COVID-19, we haven't seen major issues related to birth defects or other major pregnancy complications. Certainly, we have our guard up, and we're monitoring women who develop this infection going forward. But the good news is, so far at least, that pregnant women don't appear to be affected very heavily by the virus, and there's not appear to be a big risk to the fetus at this point, at least.
So we don't have like a Zika situation.
No, definitely not. Zika was a different beast altogether. There we knew very early that the Zika virus was associated with microcephaly, a rare type of a birth defect where the baby had a very small head. In this case, it became more of a public health emergency related to patients getting COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 virus and getting very seriously ill. But we definitely don't see that to be a major concern with this virus yet.
Elisa Godfrey is a certified professional midwife. Can you talk about what women are expressing to you? I've heard stories that some are reluctant to go to the hospital to give birth, and now they're exploring trying to have a home birth.
Yes, we have actually received a whole lot of phone calls from the very beginning of this outbreak. The phone has rang off the hook with women seeking out options for just to see what their alternatives are to birthing in the hospital. And I think that one of the biggest things that is hard with any of us, but especially when you're pregnant, especially when you're moving into a time of welcoming a baby into your family, is just really there's so much unknown. And adding the COVID layer to that increases the unknown and therefore the fear around the normal fears around giving birth and a newborn. And so the issue, though, is that the studies haven't changed and the facts are still the same, that only low-risk, healthy women can give birth and should give birth outside of the hospital. And so we received a huge outpouring of phone calls, but not all of the people who are calling are candidates for care with midwives. And I think that some people just look at, I don't want to go into the hospital, so I want to change my birth plan. And actually, that can cause more chaos and more issues if they're moving towards a new plan out of fear. And so we've done a lot of counseling, a lot of talking, a lot of consultations in helping people to understand that their plan is a good plan if that's where they need to be in the hospital. And then sometimes it is an okay plan to change care providers and decide to birth at home or birth in a birth center. But I think that the increased fear of going into a hospital where maybe there are COVID patients, that is something that is very real to the women that are pregnant and giving birth right now.
I'm sure a lot of women have questions. And so our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If this is a situation that you're looking at or you have some questions, call in. We'd like to give you some answers. Also with this, Marina Starleaf Riker, reporter at the San Antonio Express News, you wrote Birth in the Time of Coronavirus, and you shadowed a local family as they were going through this experience. And what did you find?
Yeah, so this family actually lived in Rock Springs, Texas, which is a rural town a couple hours away from San Antonio. So their names are Kayla and Alex Benavides, and she had actually had a complicated pregnancy. So for her, as Elisa talked about, I mean, it made sense for her to stick with her birth plan, which was to give birth at a hospital 70 miles away from their home in Uvalde. And at that point, when she was giving birth, the hospital had a policy that basically required laboring moms to have no visitors. And it is it's a small, rural, critical access hospital. So they are just on one story. So that meant that your husband or your birth partner or whoever your support person is was able to watch the entirety of the labor, the delivery, and the postpartum recovery period through the window. So I was really thankful and honored to be able to follow that family as they navigated this, which I just want to point out that is not the hospital's policy anymore. As of April 30th, they are allowing one visitor in the room as long as they pass screenings. And that was not a typical policy at any of the other hospitals in our region.
Dr. Patrick Ramsey at UT Health San Antonio, we already know that in certain populations here in Texas, people who are low income, women of color, they face high infant mortality and also maternal mortality. Now we also know that COVID-19 is also impacting that same population very hard. What does that mean that we take these two things and we put them together?
Well, I think having good access for patients to come into a birth center or a hospital facility is critically important. And we certainly have seen some disparities already emerging with mortality rates and access to testing among different racial ethnic groups. And we really need to try to mitigate that. I think we've set up in the community pretty clear guidance of who should receive screening or who should seek out screening. And they can call the Bexar County Health Department to get access to those portable testing facilities to get testing. So I think part of it's getting the word out to patients who are pregnant to make sure that they know that this is a service that's available throughout the region or the county, that they can go in and get the testing done if they meet the criteria. From the hospital perspective, as far as visitation policies, they have changed across all the institutions as far as who can come into the facilities. And that's the same for everybody, irrespective of racial, ethnic background. And the reason for having the changes in the visitation policy has been to try to mitigate or reduce the potential exposure for patients to the COVID-19 virus, either in the hospital or patients who might have it that might be asymptomatic coming into the hospital and potentially spreading it among other patients in the facility. So at University Hospital, at least, we've allowed one support person in labor with mom. So that's been real important for us to focus on that, to maintain that bonding between mom and her partner during that birthing experience.
So let me drill down a little bit deeper on that so we can make it crystal clear. There are some people who say that all pregnant women should get a coronavirus test, and that they're a high-risk group and they need to be tested immediately. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's certainly probably where we need to head at some point. There was some really interesting data that came out of New York from Columbia University and some affiliate hospitals about 2 weeks ago. They looked at around 200 and some pregnant women who came in for labor and delivery reasons, and they did universal screening on everybody. And it was very interesting that only a very small proportion of women were actually symptomatic, but there was about 30% of the patients they admitted were actually COVID-19 positive. So there was a very large proportion of women who came into their facility that were asymptomatic, who actually had the viral infection. And that poses risks for not only the patient, the patient's family, the providers, but as well as the newborn if we don't know. So I think as the testing capacity is ramping up in the hospital systems and in the community, we're probably heading toward that at some point. At least at this point, several hospital systems, including University Hospital at this point, for any elective procedures that includes cesarean deliveries or elective inductions, women are being pre-screened before they come into the hospital for those deliveries to make sure that they're tested positive or negative. And if they're positive and there's still a medical indication, then we're still proceeding with the obstetric procedure, but making sure that the providers and all the contacts in the hospital use the appropriate protective equipment to prevent being exposed to the virus and potentially acquiring it themselves.
All right, so let me capsulize what I heard you say. Right now in San Antonio, at most hospitals, it's not an automatic thing that if you are planning to have birth, that you don't automatically get a COVID-19 test. And but that is something that we hope to get to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the next essential step is making sure we have universal testing available.
And so, Alisa Godfrey, as a midwife, clinical director of the San Antonio Birth Center, are you encouraging women who are pregnant to get a COVID-19 test?
Yes, as soon as we have that availability to do that, I think that that is a wonderful option for people to know their status. And if someone did test positive for COVID, we would refer them to one of the wonderful consulting doctors that we work with or into a medical system where they could get treatment, and they would not be a candidate to birth outside of the hospital.
And then also probably anyone else that they're probably living with, that whole household, Go ahead, no.
No, we've been really clear with our clients and anyone who asks that we are highly recommending social distancing, the wearing of masks, and to continue to, as much as possible, shelter in place and work from home, just to be on the safe side because we don't have a lot of data, because we don't know exactly what this virus might do. We just don't know, so it's really better to hunker down and be safe than sorry, and really be, many of our clients are saying that it hasn't changed their lives a whole lot, that they were already planning a maternity leave or they were planning to stay home for 6 or 8 weeks with their babies and not work. And so they're feeling that this time of quarantine has actually been really special that they've had with their newborns, or that they're giving themselves permission to slow down. And that's always a really good thing at the end of pregnancy. And so it's hard, but it's, I think, the best thing to just really be cautious until we have more information.
Seems like just to emphasize that the recommendations are for anyone who's pregnant to do basically what they're telling anyone who is trying to exercise caution right now,
yes,
is to, you know, avoid anyone who is sick. Stay home as much as possible. Stay at least 6 feet away from other people. Wear a face mask and encourage everyone around you to wear a face mask as well. And wash your hands as frequently, and tell everyone around you to wash your hands frequently. This is how you avoid coronavirus. This is how you stay free of the virus and protect you, or protect the pregnant mother, protect the infant or the unborn child. This is something that we all have to do around the child, perform a cocoon of safety around that one child.
Exactly. And it's hard to shift cultural beliefs and practices. And so it's hard for grandparents to meet babies over FaceTime. And it's hard to not have the community gather around and celebrate, yeah, in the same ways that we used to. And so it is something that we have to sit in this place that doesn't feel great, but, you know, most of life doesn't right. always feel great, you know.
Yep. I got to take this break. We're going to talk more about a pregnancy, birth, and COVID-19. I've got some calls on the board. I'll get you on the air right after this break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about pregnancy, birth, and COVID-19. If you have a question, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to a caller, and this is Karina. Karina, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, this is Karina, and I actually am in a little bit of a weird situation. My husband is returning from Iraq in 2 days on Wednesday, and I am due in 2 weeks. And I have, you know, we have to quarantine, and he has to stay safe, and I need to stay safe and healthy. And so I'm wondering about being able to greet him. Like, is it safe or too high risk for me to give him a hug or for us to go for a walk together? We're hoping that my baby doesn't come early so that he'll actually be able to be there for the birth after the quarantine is done. And I just was trying to get a little bit of guidance on that.
Okay. Thank you for the call. So what do you advise some of your clients, Elisa Godfrey, a clinical director of the San Antonio Birth Center, certified professional midwife?
Yeah, that's such a hard situation to be in. And yeah, we're so grateful for your partner service. And it really is just following your gut feeling about it all. But the thing is that your life and your baby's health and your husband's health, it's everything is more important. And so being able to make a little additional sacrifice, I think, would be probably in the best interest. It is hard to social distance from the person you love the most in life. And so I think as long as you're practicing the safety, going for a walk and sitting at the park and doing things like that, absolutely. But you probably would want to wear masks around each other and go ahead and do that quarantine, even though it's hard. We have to make hard choices as parents, and this is just getting you ready. You're doing your grand adventure here the weeks leading up to meeting this baby.
All right. And so Dr. Patrick Ramsey, what are you telling your clients, your patients? What should people know about when to introduce other family members into to meet the child?
Yeah, and thank you, Karina, for your question, and thank you, David, for the supplemental question. You know, when if mom does not have COVID-19, mom can have the same interactions with her baby as far as breastfeeding and such afterwards. The challenge comes if mom tests positive for COVID-19. The recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics are to separate mom from baby if possible, and if that's acceptable from mom's standpoint, even if she's planning to breastfeed. Mom can still breastfeed in that situation. We would just recommend good breast hygiene, washing the breast thoroughly, making sure you're cleaning the breast pump thoroughly before and after use, but have another family member feed the baby in a separate room or a separate area. There are some moms who will want to stay proximate to their baby and not willing to accept using other electronic platforms to see their baby for that quarantine time. In those cases, well, there's barriers. Mom uses masks and hand washing and good hand hygiene, that's still possible. But again, as Lisa had mentioned, just that investment to protect the baby or protect the individual from getting exposed is so vitally important, because we just don't know. We don't think there's a big risk to the baby at this point, but I think being cautious is very important. This, and the same with other people coming into the environment around the baby. That cocoon you mentioned earlier, David, I think is really important to think about. Everybody who comes near the baby should make sure they wash their hands for 20 seconds or use hand sanitizer, should be wearing masks, should be very cautious about touching the baby if they're sick at all or even coming in close contact.
Marina Starleaf-Riker, reporter for the San Antonio Express News, she wrote the piece Birth in the Time of Coronavirus. I think I've also seen your byline on stories about evictions and housing locally, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And so, you know, it's great if you have everything going for you in life and you don't have to worry about being evicted, that your job didn't suddenly go away and you're but many people, they're not on economic strong footing. So I can imagine that is another complication that people are having to face, Marina.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, as I was reporting that story, I talked with several other moms as well. And I mean, it's kind of everything that could have posed a barrier prior to COVID-19 has now just been totally exacerbated. So, I mean, like one mom, for example, when she went to go to one of her prenatal care appointments, she was not able to bring her other infant with her. So, and for her, her husband was considered an essential worker. So all of a sudden she wasn't able to bring the baby with her to the appointment and had to scramble to find childcare. I mean, of course, you heard this kind of reiterated over and over and over before COVID-19, but I mean, Texas has a very high rate of folks who don't have insurance. So, I mean, right now, if you're barely being able to make ends meet and pay rent and get groceries and you're not working, I mean, that just adds a huge barrier to your ability to be able to access healthcare. And I mean, I'm sure Dr. Ramsey could probably address this better, but I mean, like, stress is a really big issue for women who are pregnant. So, I mean, that just kind of further complicates everything.
Right. So we do have an email from Blair. Should expectant mothers have a backup plan ready in case hospitals do get overwhelmed, such as a midwifing birthing center, or should we feel safe going into labor and the delivery ward, seeing, you know, what does the curve look like right now for pregnancy? So Dr. Patrick Ramsey, that's a great question.
Yeah, great question, Blair. I think we've done a great job in San Antonio and Bexar County and the region to flatten the curve by doing the things we need to do with social distancing, hand washing, hand sanitizing, and staying indoors. So we have seen the number of cases kind of gradually climb in San Antonio and Bexar County. So the hospitals have ample capacity right now. We've seen a few COVID-19 positive patients in the pregnant population in the community so far, but it's not overwhelming. I don't think you would necessarily have to have a backup plan. The hospital systems all have backup plans of what they would do in case of surge, where they would have a supplemental labor unit or defer to a different hospital if that occurred. I think the hospital changing a birth plan, as was mentioned earlier by Lisa, is very challenging and may actually introduce more challenges or more difficulties for your delivery. So I would just stick with your plan. You've got a provider that's caring for you and just go forward with that.
And right now, it doesn't look like, I mean, it's not on the horizon that we can detect that we're going to have an overwhelmed hospital situation here in San Antonio.
No, it does not look like it at this point. There's a really nice dashboard on the State of Texas Department of Health and Human Services website that looks at surge capacity, and there's ample number of hospital beds available, including labor and delivery units, as well as ICU beds. So we're doing very well in Texas. The challenge will be, now that we're opening things back up slowly at the state level and locally later this month,
yep,
will we see the numbers climb or not?
All right, let's go to the phones with Benjamin. And Benjamin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to know what women and families can do that maybe can't afford a midwife or are from lower socioeconomic parts of the city or don't have insurance.
Benjamin, great question. Thanks for that. Alisa Godfrey, certified professional midwife, clinical director, San Antonio Birth Center. Some people may have the impression that this is something that is available only to people who are have an abundance in their life.
Right, and that is one of the barriers to midwifery care in our whole country and in our state and in our city. And so here at the San Antonio Birth Center, we do have extended payment plans. We have a financial hardship application that so currently we don't accept Medicaid, but any clients who do have Medicaid, they can receive an extremely discounted service here with us in our self-pay package. But it is hard to find the care that you want when cost is a factor, and that is something that we're always addressing here in my practice. But to know that there are wonderful providers out there who do accept Medicaid or do lower cost care, or do are able to be in network with so many insurance companies, and midwives generally are out of network with insurance companies. And so that is a barrier, and that is something that we're always addressing. But I encourage people who are healthy and low risk and are looking for a natural delivery with, remember that outside of the hospital, women are, do not receive an epidural. And so women need to be completely committed to doing the natural birth process. And what that entails is education and having their a mental and spiritual also and physical readiness for birth. And so if someone feels like they are in that category, absolutely reach out and get the information, because there are a lot of people in the community trying to provide midwifery care at lower cost, so that not it's not just a something that's only available to those who can afford it.
But I would imagine I would also need a very secure support system as well. I would need it to have when you say home birth, it's at your house, right?
Right. So home births are done either in the woman's home or in the home of a family member. We do have criteria when we're doing a home birth that it needs, you know, a very clean environment that is free of pet hair and that supplies are ready. And you do have to have your space ready for that. The birth center is set up and always clean and ready to go. It is like a home-like environment that is within the San Antonio Birth Center is within a few blocks of three major hospitals that all have labor and delivery units. And so if needed, the access to a hospital is close by here at the birth center. But there is a lot of, like I said, mental preparation and educational preparation. And I think that that's one of the issues with families who are thinking about switching birth plans at the very end of pregnancy, that becomes very challenging, because if the pregnant person has not put in the time to really understand what that kind of birth is like, it can
not be to be taken lightly, to be fully explored, ask a lot of questions. If you have a question now, call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back, we want to dive deep into telehealth. Can you really get a good diagnosis, care, you know, through Zoom? Will that work for you, you know, or when do you have to go to the doctor's office? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source, Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We continue talking about pregnancy, birth, and COVID-19, and we have Gilbert on the phones. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Gilbert, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello. We're having our second home birth, and quick shout-out to San Antonio Nurse Midwives. And just to echo that previous comment, it definitely does take a lot of mental, spiritual, and physical preparation for the whole family for a home birth, and it's not definitely taken lightly. But I wanted to learn, we're expecting our baby to come, you know, any day now, 1 to 2 weeks, and what are some unique strategies that we need to use to keep our newborn healthy? And particularly, I'm a public educator, and if I go to work in the fall, what's something that I should keep in mind having a newborn at home?
Well, congratulations, and great question. Thank you so much for that. So, Dr. Patrick Ramsey.
Yeah, thank you, Gilbert, for the question. I think that's really important. I think as far as protecting the baby, we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier, just making sure that everybody around the baby or anybody caring for the baby in that home environment is going to be using masks, and who don't live in the house, wearing masks, good hand hygiene, good social distancing to stay clear of the baby, especially if somebody's ill, try to keep them outside the house. So I think that's very important, especially as you go back to work this fall and the uncertainties about maybe a second surge of the virus in the fall time period. Congratulations on your upcoming delivery. I think that's super exciting. And again, I think just from that experience, when that gets ready to happen, that the midwife that comes into your house to help, make sure she's using proper hand hygiene, that everybody's wearing masks, because you don't know what that person may or may not have been exposed to before coming into your home.
Marina Starleaf Riker, reporter for the Express News, as you covered the family, the rural family that was having a child in coronavirus, I guess they made good use of telehealth?
You know, she actually had a complicated pregnancy, so she ended up driving to the hospital quite a bit, making that, I guess it would have been a 140-mile round trip, which I think really kind of speaks to access to care, particularly in rural areas. So that was not something that I addressed really in that story, but I have talked with other moms that, yeah, they're definitely getting appointments on through telehealth, and that has sort of ranged from doctors sending like blood pressure kits and stuff like that, so that way they are able to do those checks at home. But I mean, from what I'm hearing, and of course Alisa and Dr. Ramsey can address this probably a whole lot better than I can, but for the visits that need to be in person, those are still being done in person.
So Alisa Godfrey, a certified professional midwife, do y'all use telehealth?
We are. We have been really amazed at how wonderful it's going.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I didn't think much of it until I started looking at it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. So what I did is I invested in about 65 Dopplers and blood pressure cuffs, and we put together kits so that every client got a Doppler and a bottle of gel and a tape measure and urine sticks and urine cups and blood pressure cuffs. And so what we've done is decided what we consider essential visits. And those usually correspond with a blood draw and or needing an ultrasound, or if the midwife that's doing the telehealth visit feels like the client needs to be seen in person, we obviously will get them in. But it has greatly diminished the amount of traffic in and out of the birth center, and we're able to keep the place cleaner and definitely have just a lid on who's coming in and out, and screening at the door. Everyone, if it's taking temperatures, we have a basket full of masks. We have wonderful people who have donated masks, so we're able to hand out masks to all of our clients. And the telehealth visits have been really well, really gone over well. Our clients have been really happy, and the family can still be involved. The kids can still crawl on mom's belly as she lays on her couch, and the midwife watches over FaceTime or, you know, any of the platforms. So, yeah, it's been a really unique strategy, and it's worked really well. And I think it might be something that in some small way we might continue even after this, you know.
Sure. And when we get to a new normal, when it's all over, whatever that might be. Dr. Patrick Ramsey, telehealth's having a moment now. And it's a good thing we had this in place already, but now it's really gone full throttle.
Yeah, David, it's really been pretty spectacular. We've been talking about telehealth and trying to modernize and innovate our practices to be more efficient. And the COVID-19 pandemic has certainly pushed us over the edge to deeply immerse in that environment. So we definitely, as Lisa mentioned, jumped off the cliff and started doing this real time with the Zoom platforms and other protected platforms for having virtual interactions with patients, either on the phone or a video conferencing. And we've spaced out visits, as Lisa also mentioned, to make sure that patients that need to come in, come in. But if it's just a check of blood sugars or a blood pressure check, see if we can get virtual information from the patient from a blood pressure monitor they may have at home or their own glucometer to just show us their blood sugars or share their blood sugars or blood pressures at the time of our interaction, ask about fetal movements, make sure the baby's doing well. Still have those visits for ultrasounds and those in-person visits for women that have complicated situations, but definitely trying to back down on the number of visits in person. It makes it a lot better for families, so they don't have that extra level of stress to put the mask on and hand hygiene and social distancing going into a clinic and worrying. They can stay at home and we can have that virtual interaction in a safe way.
So PPE, the personal protective equipment, a lot of talk about that, not having enough, having some nurses having to reuse PPE, and it's just caused a lot of questions about practices that are happening and whether or not they're putting other people in jeopardy or in increased risk because of concerns about PPE. So Dr. Patrick Ramsey, has this become a concern on the baby ward?
Well, fortunately, we've been in pretty good shape because we have done a good job flattening the curve in San Antonio. We haven't seen a large surge in our healthcare systems that I believe most of the hospital systems have adequate PPE available. We have very strict guidelines for who gets uses that equipment during when the patients come in. If they're exposed to an aerosolizing procedure, the providers are all wearing the protective equipment. We're wearing protective equipment for any woman that's COVID-19 positive. during labor and delivery, whether that be by vaginal delivery or C-section, to protect ourselves as well as protect the baby as well. So I think we're in good shape for the moment. We're not anticipating a major surge at this point, but time will tell as we start to relax our precautions.
Alisa, are you seeing any concerns with any lack of PPE that y'all use for midwifery?
You know, gloves have been a little bit harder to come by, but of course, masks in the beginning, but I feel like the systems are moving again, and so we are not lacking any at this time. And then we are just using an extra level of precaution than what is typical for an out-of-hospital midwifery practice. But, you know, it's new times, and we're all learning to go with the flow and learning to do the next best thing. Isn't that what life is all about?
So if you have a newborn, how soon do you put a mask on a newborn? Will it protect them, or you just want everyone else around the child to have a mask, Dr. Ramsey?
Yeah, I think putting a mask on a newborn probably is not very practical. The masks aren't designed to fit a baby's face. More importantly, that anybody that comes into contact with the baby wears a mask, does good hand hygiene, keeps distant from the baby when not having good hand hygiene and hand washing. So I wouldn't advise putting a mask on the baby for issues related to the mask size and such.
Marina Starleaf-Riker, as you wrote about the family in Rock Springs, when Uvalde had the baby, they had little complications, some concerns about COVID-19. How did it all work out?
Oh, it went great. Yeah, it was a really beautiful experience. The delivery was totally uncomplicated. They're at home, they're safe, they're healthy, and it was really, really beautiful because we were able to be there when the family first saw each other for the first time. So when Dad got to meet their little girl and Mom and Dad got to see each other, like, in person, not through the window for the first time. That moment was just so beautiful to be able to be there and witness.
Dr. Patrick Ramsey, we keep an eye on these statistics like infant mortality, maternal mortality. Unfortunately, they're high in Texas compared to other parts of the developed world. Do you see this impacting that at all?
Well, certainly it could. I think we've seen the mortality rate from COVID-19 in Texas to be perhaps a little bit lower than it's been in other parts of the world and other parts of the country. So that's the good news. Obviously, the numbers may bump because we are seeing increased number of deaths related to this infection. So I think time will tell as we go forward. We really don't know what the true case fatality rate is with COVID-19 because we're not testing everybody yet. So we don't know what the denominator or the number of people who have the infection that might be asymptomatic to count into that calculation. So we'll learn more in the next 6 months. 6 to 12 months, but time will tell.
And time will tell. Lots of questions because we've only had this for a few months, so we don't know about early pregnancy, the development and of the child, and so that's still to be learned.
Yeah, for sure. The babies that were exposed in China, at most, were exposed to the virus now for 5 months, so we really haven't seen the effect of maybe pregnancies that were exposed in the first trimester, what that might mean downstream. We know from other viral infections that there's always a potential risk for growth problems if the pregnancy is affected with the virus and involves the placenta. There was some early concern about potential increased risk for preterm delivery with SARS-CoV-2 or the COVID-19 infection, but some more recent data suggests that may have been more just medical reasons that patients got delivered than that related to the virus itself. So we're certainly going to be following women who are exposed to the virus very closely for their pregnancy if they were infected in the first trimester or second trimester. And again, we'll learn more by the end of the year what this truly means for pregnant women. But so far, the signs are encouraging.
All right. Dr. Patrick Ramsey, professor of obstetrics and gynecology and a maternal fetal specialist at UT Health San Antonio. Also with us this afternoon, Marina Starleaf-Riker, reporter for the Express News, and Alisa Godfrey, the clinical director of the San Antonio Birth Center, a certified professional midwife, a licensed midwife. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.